Now, back to Will and Diddy on 95.7 The Game.
Like, do you actually have a live one? Like, can we try to make it funny and make you laugh?
Yeah, I mean,
do you have a fake radio laugh?
The fake radio laugh. Well, that would be like I sounded like Cookie Monster there for Shasky back 6 years ago.
See, like perfect.
Pretty good.
Dibs has a good fake radio laugh. Yeah. He just did it.
Yeah. Tell it, Dibs.
20
okay.
hours a week with this guy. Yeah. Gotta keep the change, man.
I love it.
Hey, we do have this, by the way, a development with the Warriors tonight. We're still waiting on the Draymond answer. Don't have it. He was not, quote, spotted at shoot-around. I love when reporters say it like that, as if we're all, like, laying in the weeds, hiding. He is not spotted at shoot-around. He wasn't at shoot-around. But Kyle Anderson is out. He's out tonight, dealing with a hamstring injury. GP2 officially in. We're still waiting on Draymond, and we get those injury updates at the bottom of the hour every hour. That means in 12 minutes we'll have another update. Maybe we get something definitive at that moment on Draymond Green. Meantime, as the Warriors are in Minnesota tonight, tip-off a little bit over 2 hours away, Warriors Live at 5:30, presented by Xfinity Stream Sports from the best seat in the house with Xfinity. Bring on the good stuff. We're hanging with Odyssey NBA insider and our very good friend Nick Friedell here at 95.7 The Game, Willard and Dibbs. So ESPN put together their little article of five offers that would change the title race. And I thought to myself before I clicked on it, well, Warriors aren't going to be in that because they're not in the title race. The Warriors are in that.
And then Marky Saw came from ESPN.com, and went, you went, yeah.
Let me guess. Warriors, Lakers.
Yes.
Knicks.
Yep.
Exactly. So here's what ESPN threw out there. You do what you want to do with it. The Warriors acquire Zach LaVine from the Chicago Bulls.
That was an oh-no.
In exchange for Andrew Wiggins, GP2, Kevon Looney, and their 2026 first-round pick.
Hell no! Yeah. I mean, hell no! Are you kidding me?
Thank
you. Bulls couldn't give up. They cannot get rid of LaVine. They've been trying to attach first-round picks to his contract.
Oh, but ESPN states he's playing much better this year, Nick.
Who wrote that one? Mark, who wrote that one?
This was written by NBA insiders.
Oh, all right.
There you go.
I'm not touching that one.
Unnamed humans.
The idea that the Warriors would give up that much for anybody at this point, frankly, but especially LaVine. Come on, no. That
even if they didn't have to attach a first, then you're dealing with two expirings and Andrew Wiggins, who has maybe played out his time here. Well, if you didn't have to attach a first, would that make it palatable enough for you to make that deal?
Let me throw in there, Zach makes $46 million next year.
Yeah.
And then the following year, a player option.
That it absolutely will get
for
picked
$49 million.
Yeah. Hey. That contract, that LaVine deal was one of those rare contracts where the second it got signed, the entire NBA was like, oh no! No, this is not good. And he had all those injury problems the last couple years. To his credit, he's been very good offensively this year. But when you sign a deal in the NBA, it's got to be unbelievably bad to have the rest of the NBA go, oh no.
Immediately.
And that is what happened. So this is the same. It's the same as it ever was for Warriors trade conversations. Would Zach LaVine fit here? Absolutely. I think he would actually play pretty well because he'd be motivated by the fact that he's on the Warriors with Steph and Draymond. We know he can hit 25 or 30 a game. He would give them that offensive lift they need. He still does not play consistent enough defense to be on a team that's worth a damn. And to have that and know that and know what the contract holds, and that part is so crucial. He's going to pick up that option because nobody's going to give him another 240, whatever that number is, that's not coming again. So he's going to pick that up. If I were Mike Dunleavy, I would just laugh reading that stuff, as I'm sure he probably does reading most of that.
Well, it's a name that has been different than the ones that have already been thrown out. And, you know, Jimmy Butler was a name that's been bandied about over and over. And it seems like the Warriors have kind of put that to bed. But, you know, Jimmy's got a player option as well that he's not going to pick up with Miami. I'd be scared of him picking it up here. And I look at it this way, Nick. No matter who the Warriors would bring in at that level of salary. That would, to me, hamstring them in the offseason from going out and getting a player that they actually would want in free agency.
This is where fans have to be patient, and you guys know better than anyone that's very difficult, especially when it's in the ecosystem every single day and we're all talking about it. The last thing I would want if I were a Warriors fan is for them to make the big swing and make a move, because I don't think any of these players, Jimmy Butler, Zion, I've heard that name thrown up, they're not going to make that much of a difference. I can tell you, again, from my own experience, let's always remember, Mike Dunleavy played with Jimmy. I mean, they were teammates in Chicago. Mike knows full well what it means to not only have Jimmy as a competitor and a leader of your team, but what's happened with Jimmy and what he's become over time, an incredible Hall of Fame player who wants to do things on his own and doesn't want to be told by anybody what he has to do or when he has to do it. So I actually think, guys, that Jimmy would fit within the framework of this room. I think he does want to win. The problem is Jimmy wants to get paid, and this goes back to the contract problem. You do not want to give Jimmy that kind of money for those kind of years because you just don't know if his knees are going to hold up after this much time. I would also add, with Zion, I went to that Pelicans-Warriors game. It was about a month ago in New Orleans. Zion, guys, is just huge. I keep getting the drop. Damn.
That's when you...
How
many years have you covered the league?
15. Okay.
You've met Steph.
I think that's the hardest part. I'm seeing this stuff every day. Now I'm going to like 3-4 games a year right now. So when I actually do go, I'm like, whoa, okay.
I went to a game.
Let's see what I was at that game in Orlando when Draymond got tossed in the first quarter and Steph was damn near in tears. I'm like, oh God. The soap opera always keeps going.
Stand on it.
What I would say on all of it though is I saw Zion. Guys, he's huge. He's just
like his personality's bigger than life.
He's just No.
Physically, he's a big guy.
He's a big dude.
Yeah.
And at this stage of his career, with all the injuries that have piled up, with the hamstring injuries and everything that's happened, when I hear people say, oh, well, if you got Zion in the right framework of a team, there's a lot of similarities to the Wiggins conversation. I'm the first one to acknowledge. I never, ever thought that Andrew Wiggins would be the second best player on a title team. He was. Now, is he that guy right now? No. There are a lot of different reasons why that's probably happened over time. But he has been great for them to get that extra title. Could it work with Zion? It's a possibility. Having seen what I saw not only a few weeks ago, but over the last few years in New Orleans, I wouldn't trade Zion at all under any circumstances because I don't trust that he's able to maintain the shape he needs to be in night after night after night to be an all-star game-changing player.
Mick Friedell with us in studio, Willard and Dibs. I want to go back to your Jonathan Kuminga comments, and I want to throw this at you because you stated earlier, if it were you, you would move on from him, not because he's not a good player, but you're in that spot where you're going to have to pay him a whole lot of money, and is he going to turn into a consistent 20 to 25 per night type of a guy? You'd vote no. It was B.J. Armstrong who came on earlier today and was quoted saying this: if Jonathan Kuminga chooses the hard path, he will be the next great Golden State Warrior. The Chris Mullins, the Tim Hardaways, he will join those guys. This isn't a talent issue from what I can see. Do you reject that?
BJ won 3 titles and has lived in the league for decades. So I actually trust his judgment, Mark, as far as what is he seeing that somebody who may cover a team or covers a league, they're not seeing. Having watched Kuminga night after night those first few years, I still talk to my friends that are within the organization. They really like him. But this is the question that every pro sports organization has to answer. Is the guy that you see at 23, 24 going to be that much of a game changer at 27 or 28 when the contract hits? Because everybody likes Kuminga right now. They, oh, man, there's still plenty of growth. the ceiling, all the buzzwords.
$7 million a year.
Seven, bingo. When Kuminga gets 40, 50 mil, immediately that shifts. So hearing that, do I trust BJ's basketball judgment? Absolutely. In my own judgment, having watched Kuminga and having seen the progression that he's already started to make, I would not make that decision. I would say, all right, I'm going to get the most that we can right now and see what happens. But I say all that, guys, and this is the problem that the Warriors are having. Trade Kuminga right now. What are you getting in return that is going to take you from where you're at as a 500 ball club to some other place? And so, Mark, all of that is to say, in the end, I don't think they're moving Kuminga because I don't think there is that kind of difference maker out there. And then you pay him because you're going to either have to match the deal
right,
or you're going
right.
to pay him outright. And then you go from there. Maybe you make the move down the line. But with what you've already put in and seeing the assets that are available outside of your own team, I think Kuminga's here.
And it's interesting what BJ said about the hard road. And, you know, if Jonathan chooses to go the hard road, which I guess would be to stay with the Warriors and maybe take less than he could get elsewhere or sign for a number that is, you know, manageable for the organization. That way they could surround him with enough talent so he doesn't have to immediately become their best player when Steph decides to retire. So the hard road may not be an instant payday and, you know, go the Jordan Poole route, which was, I got my bag, and then he got dealt, and now he can average 22 a night.
I thought you were going to say he got decked, and then he got dealt.
He did.
Because that, I think that also changed true. That whole story.
For me, yeah.
Absolutely.
We talked earlier in the crossover about the one thing that, you know, you wish went differently, and my thing was I wish that they would have suspended Draymond and made it so Jordan Poole would have felt a little bit better about what went down, because the fact that that video got leaked and we all got to see it, and I can close my eyes and I can still
awful.
Picture walking,
still see it.
Watching yeah. him just kind of saunter over to Jordan Poole and then kapow, hits him with the one piece and then see it ring night. And so, you know, because of that, I think Jordan carried on in a certain way that following season.
I couldn't agree with you more. The entire tenor of that season that was so celebratory after just winning the title, hey, let's go try to run it back. It all changed in one moment.
Yeah.
And it hovered. Again, having talked to all the people associated with that team, they all felt it. I'm going to set the new record here. But they all felt
did.
It every day because they knew how much that weighed on everybody. So as far as dynamics, it's something else BJ hit on in that interview, Mark. The leadership is still great with Steph and Draymond and Kerr, but always, always, always remember the NBA is talent first. You can have the best owner in the world and the best GM and the best coach. All that stuff is great, and it's very important. If you don't have talent, you are not going to win. And in the end, right now with this Warriors team, they don't have enough talent to again contend for a title.
All right, so let me help our listeners shape this conversation then in that direction. Let's say they do go ahead and sign up Kuminga long-term, and then they still got their flexibility, and you feel better about having him in a deal because financially he would match better with other players. I say all that to set this up. Is Giannis ever leaving Milwaukee? What the hell?
I don't think he ever is. And, Mark, it's interesting because we spent a portion of the conversation discussing Steph and how much it means to him to wear one jersey. I have had the exact same conversation with Steph. Hit me on the bubble.
Whoop. You've had it with Giannis?
The same thing. Now, in fairness, that was 6 years ago, and yeah. Stuff can change. I asked Damian Lillard the same stretch of questions
when he was in Portland,
and yeah. he said the same thing. This is where I want to be. I want to win here. I know I can do it. But the reality is Giannis has been on record over and over as saying, I want to be in one place. He changed that tenor a little bit a couple years ago. It happens. I don't think Giannis is ever going to leave Milwaukee. Having said that, I also think that if he ever were to leave, he'd want to play with Steph Curry because he's also a human being who sees what's what. The problem, and this is why this is so much fun being back in here with you guys. Steph is incredible right now. Steph's the greatest shooter we've ever seen. Steph is awesome. Steph in another year or two is not going to be the same player. That is just the reality of basketball. He's not going to be the same exact guy every night who's going to go drop 30 or 35. Could he still do it some nights? Of course he can, because he's incredible. But he's not going to be at the top of his talents the same way we've seen. So, with as far as Giannis, if you're Giannis and you're still, what is he, 29?
Yeah, I mean, right in there.
He has so many years left to be at a different level than Steph will be at if and when that deal would ever go down.
And I think that Steph is already down a notch from where he was. And I was saying this earlier in the month on Willard and Dibs, but he is still capable of doing it, but he doesn't do it every night. And if you look at, you know, peak Steph, it was every night he would get you that, like you're saying, 28 and 30. And now he still has a 30 in his bag, but there are nights now where he had a back-to-back games where he had no assist, and he had a game this year where he didn't make a field goal. And these are things that we are not used to seeing. So I think that Steph still has it in him to be peak Steph, but more often than not, he's not as good as he usually is, and as a result, having no other help, they're losing these games.
Ding, ding, ding.
So
that's exactly what happens. And the funny part to me, guys, is I thought the best Steph ever played when I was out here in that last KD year and those couple years after that was that year post-pandemic. Everybody was kind of coming out of it. And that dude was dropping like 40, 45 every single night.
Yep.
His teammates still expect that out of him, and Dibs, to exactly your point, he's still capable of it whenever he wants. But the consistency of doing it and the pressure that comes with it, that is not the same. That is exactly why the Warriors are what their record says there is in this moment, because they're so reliant on Steph, and he's not able to do the same exact thing every night.
95.7 The Game, breaking news.
Draymond Green is out tonight. So he either remains sick or the back is still bulky, or it is a combination of both. But when you look at the Warriors roster now tonight in Minnesota, very difficult place to play, end of a trip, the two sort of swingman big guys who can bring the ball up the floor, and Draymond Green and Kyle Anderson are both out, so this becomes that much harder of a challenge this evening.
Yeah, it'll be third straight game without Draymond, and I was looking forward to maybe some slow dancing between Rudy Gobert and Draymond Green.
I mean, I hate it for that reason. Yeah. I hate that whenever we can have Draymond and Rudy and we don't get it,
yeah,
that's lame.
I was hoping they could go cheek-to-cheek again, toe-to-toe.
But Draymond's doing those seven-person Zoom sessions that have changed him around now. My man Ohm wrote that story the other day about how Draymond has turned this corner, but the tell always is what happens when Rudy shows up.
And Yusuf would be another one. Yusuf Nurkic.
He must actually be sick. That's my takeaway. Draymond must be
great.
really no sick doubt. If he's passing on Rudy Gobert.
Or the back is barking, and you know, you look at last year, and everybody had this buzzword of, if Draymond didn't miss 25 games, they're a 50-win team, and that was kind of the, not the truth serum, but that was kind of the potion we all took in the offseason, and then they started 12-3, and it felt like,
here we go.
You know what? Maybe if Draymond didn't miss all those games, maybe they were a 50-win team. Maybe this thing is real. And they've lost 17 of 24 since. So 12-3, they were something, and now they're something else.
Are you kidding me? I was texting Slater at 12-3 going, hey, I see it. They're playing a little bit better. Here's the defense. And then, and what the scariest part, as we all know, is we haven't even hit the Steph goes out for a couple weeks, and they try to get it all together. Lucas is all mad at me now for even bringing it up. But the reality is, every year there is something. There's some kind of injury. Something pops up, and he has missed a little bit of a stretch. When that happens now, maybe the offense actually looks a little bit better because they're forced to not be so reliant on him. But you take Steph out of this lineup.
Oh, God.
It's not enough.
The dog days haven't even hit yet. Let's take some phone calls. Some people would love to rap with Nick, including one of our favorites, Phil Mo. Mike is on the line.
What's up, Mike?
Phil Mo.
What's up, Nick? I heard you got fired for smoking weed at ESPN. Don't be doing that in Bristol, man.
No. Come on, Philmo.
No, I'm joking. Anyway, hey, can you? Okay, so, Nick, we got this guy by the name of Guru, Daryl the Guru Johnson. So he's a Cowboys fan, right? And he be thinking, like, we could do these cockamamie trades, and, like, he be trying to, like, act like he's Jerry Jones and Joe Lacob is going to just do a trade just to make a move or a headline. And so, like, if you could tell him and the fans out here, like, literally, we're 19-20, right? 2 years ago, 3 years ago, Boston was, like, 500. I'm not saying that we're Boston. I'm just saying, like, people got to enjoy the journey. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's a process. Like, some of the best seasons or seasons that get turned around. And all I'm saying is, man, we could turn it around. And then also, if you just real quick, Nick, they act like we're in basketball hell, but we've been horrible and we've seen hella ugly years. My point is this, though, Nick. You talk about Kuminga. You never really been on board. You always said trade Kuminga, which I respect. You gonna stick to your gun. But, and I know you ain't, you feel me? I don't know if you've been watching, but right when he got injured, It was like a weird period in which he was starting to kind of like take off at the perfect time, and the injury literally happened at the worst time. If Kuminga would have been available for these last couple of six, seven games, we're better than our record shows. And I mean, I don't know what to do with Kuminga. I feel you want to trade him, but Nick, you got to give me this, man. He's coming. He was just about to come into his own, I feel, this year. He was going to have one of them Gilbert Arenas second half of the year seasons, man. And it's just unfortunate that he got hurt. We can't do nothing about it. But, nah, good hearing from you, Nick, man, for real. Keep that laugh.
Mike, I appreciate it. It's great to hear from you always. Guys, I was cracking up because on the car ride in, I heard Priest from Palo Alto. He was calling Stein and Goon. Priest used to call us up on the weekends and tell us James Wiseman's going to the Hall of Fame.
Hall of Fame.
So, you know, everybody's got their takes. Yep. Some of them don't end up the way you want. But to Phil Moe's point, I don't see this team being able to make the move that makes a difference. But to the point about Kuminga, I think, is only ever going to come into his own when he's not on a team and underneath the shadow that is Steph and Draymond. I'm not sure Kuminga is ever going to reach the potential that everybody wants to see from him within this kind of team with these type of stars. I am not sold that Kuminga is ever going to get to the point that Phil Moe and other Warriors fans want him to be. Maybe he does. Maybe I'll just be wrong. But right now, to think that if the injury didn't happen, that we were going to see that much of a different guy, I don't buy that either. I had seen the way he had been playing. He had been putting up nice numbers.
Yeah.
He still hasn't done it to this point over and
yeah,
over
it's
and
the
over
last it. Seven games, he averaged 23 a night, and he was shooting it well, and the three was going down, and it felt like, you
the
know,
confidence
he,
was there.
And it finally felt like he was emerging, even though I agree with you, like with Steph and Draymond there, he's not going to ever get 22 shots a night. But that's what has so many people tantalized, was that it seemed like it was right there and it was about to start happening.
The one thing I'd add, though, guys, and it's to Mike's point, it's what you guys are in the conversation with every day. You have no idea how good it is, even when it's not very good, because the other side to this is the Chicago Bulls.
Oh, boy.
And they are irrelevant. They are completely irrelevant. They had the moment with Derrick Rose, and they got to the Eastern Conference Finals. He got hurt. That was awful. It changed everything. That team has been irrelevant for a decade now, since they traded Jimmy Butler. The Warriors still have Steph, and they still have Draymond, and they still have Kerr, and they have a proud team, which is exactly what Kerr was talking to you guys about yesterday. It's going to give whatever they have that night because they want to be there for Steph and they want to ride this all the way through. What fans need to accept now is this team's days of going after titles with the group that they have right now, they're done. It's probably not going to happen. Not that there's no chance ever that they can't make some move, but at this stage, they're done. They're still a better entertainment product, though, than a hell of a lot of other NBA teams, because you still get to watch Steph Curry, and you still don't know what he's going to do night to night. But the expectations have got to change because they just don't have enough around him to make it happen.
Let's take another one. Kevin in Oakland is on. Hey, Kevin, thanks for calling. What you doing, man?
Hey, gentlemen. I'm just swapping batteries, the electric bikes out here in San Francisco, and I just want to chime in. I'm with Verdell. I have a good thing. Who would you want right now, Monte Ellis or J.K.A.? Monte shot free throws better. He played defense. He could bring the ball up and run the offense. He became a good pro, a good offensive player. And I have a little insight. I've been with the Warriors training camp for a while. I don't want to say what I do, but like I said, I've watched Monte become a good pro, and we got rid of him. And I watched J.K., and he hasn't improved. He wants to, but he's not going to improve. In the long run, Monte, when we got rid of him, is going to be a better pro than J.K., and that's my two cents. And I also like to chime in. The table's been set by Bob Myers. Bob Myers did not discipline
Jump there. But I guess my response to the whole Monte Ellis, Jonathan Kuminga comparison is, why are we comparing those two guys? They're not even close to the same type of player.
Exactly.
That's a confusing comparison to me. And in the end, if you're a Warrior fan who's focused in this era on championships, Monte Ellis led to what? Like, they had to actually move off of him in order to build what they were trying
here
to build.
Steph.
Yeah.
I think a better comp would be Monte Ellis or Jordan Poole. And then we could get in. All the Jordan Poole acolytes would come out of the woodwork. Monte was 19.6 a night over 7 years for bad teams. And if you had him on this team, he'd be a guy who could get you a bucket. But there was a reason why Monte didn't lead his team to wins. They were bad around him.
Yeah, I mean, you know what it makes me wonder about Kuminga and Nick? I wonder what your response to this would be. It feels like you could have a good debate over whether or not the Warriors were a good place or a bad place for Jonathan to end up. On one hand, you could say the growth got stunted. They've never just let him have the reins and do whatever he could do to kind of grow. On the other hand, he gets a good organization that wins. He learns in that framework. And I think to what you were just pointing at, we've still yet to see Jonathan Kuminga ever on the floor when the defense is like, let's focus on him. Our job is to stop him. He's never had to do that for a day in his life. So how would you answer that? Was this a good place or a bad place for him?
I would always lean towards good place, Mark, and I think it's a really good question. But I would lean good place because these are pros. Steph is the ultimate pro. I know, having talked to these guys for years in the Omari Spellman, Jacob Evans era,
there's this chill that just flew up my spine.
Ty Bowman running around. You know,
you're not going to say Tom Fuller, are you?
Like, okay, whoa,
Eric Paschal.
We have come on Eric Paschal.
Oh, yeah.
All right, man.
Alan Smiley Geach. We need to play the Geach.
I say that because those guys love Draymond. That's not like some media-driven. Those dudes that are in that locker room day after day love Draymond Green. Mark, the problem, though, and it ties into the caller's point in what we're talking about here with Kuminga and Monte Ellis. You want to know why the Warriors are in the spot they're in? They have drafted really poorly. Swung and missed terribly on James Wiseman.
Yep.
That Wiseman pick and the lack of talent that came with that number two slot really set them back badly. Moses Moody is a hell of a guy. Steve Kerr said from the beginning, this is a 10-15 year pro. He's going to be great for us. He's barely playing now. He signed the deal. He's just not what the Warriors hoped he would be. Kuminga, what exactly is he going to become over time? But going back, Jacob Evans, I mean, no team can hit all the time and get Steph and Draymond and Clay, etc. They have missed a lot. And if you're trying to figure out how did the Warriors get to the place that they're in, it's Bob Myers, it's that front office that was so great on so many different things. But recently, with those picks, they swung, they missed, and it's really hurt.
I think if you put aside the players themselves, and you're right about those players, but just hearing Mark lay it out about where Kuminga is now, and just hearing you guys have that conversation, it had me thinking about the ages of the players they were drafting and how that, to me, was really the mistake. And they never uttered the phrase two timelines, but you drafted an 18-year-old Wiseman with no college experience. You drafted Kuminga at 18 with no college experience. Moses Moody was, I think, one and done at Arkansas, maybe two. He was 19. So you drafted these young pups. And then this last year, not the Quentin Post, but the year before, you got Trace Jackson Davis, a guy who had played, and he was a grown-up already. And even Pods had played in a couple of spots, and he was almost 21. So I do think that it put aside the fact that Wiseman was a bust and a miss. The fact that they were leaning on 18-year-olds, and now you're in a spot with Kuminga, he's 22, and you have to make a decision on him, and he's probably 4 to 6 years away from being the best he's going to be. So do you want to pay $160 million to see if he gets better or not?
I don't know if you have a choice, though, Dibs. Yeah. That's the problem. Like, you've put the time in. You've made the pick. We think the pick has worked to a point. I think that's just the way that it goes in the NBA. But, guys, Dibs, even hearing you lay all that out, fans in the Bay need to truly appreciate just how lucky everybody was that that team won that last title. Because I was flashing back in my own head when they made the Kuminga and Moody picks. We're all sitting out there at Chase Center, and everybody's going, oh, what are they going to do? Do you draft an older guy? Do you put the picks into a trade and get some veteran in who can help right away? And they pick Kuminga and Moody, and everybody around there was like, who the hell are these guys? You know, are they going to be any good? What's going to happen? And we think Kuminga's pretty good now. Moody, I don't know if he's going to be able to help them the way that the Warriors thought, but saying all of that is the Warriors still found a way to win another title. Nobody, even within that organization, up until the final series against the Celtics, was looking at that team going, yeah, this is a title contender. They made the pieces work. But Dibs, and this ties into the same theme, that team got a huge boost from Otto Porter,
yep,
and Gary Payton II. It wasn't like these rookie guys were coming in and being the type of game changers that you need them to be. So I understand there's a lot of hype around Kuminga. There's a lot of hope around him. Guys, to me, I think you have to give him the deal, but even giving him the deal doesn't mean we're committing to this guy forever and he's going to be the next face of the next great Warriors team.
You know what it felt like also, that this group seems to be pitching the last 24 to 48 hours, and I really wonder how the Warrior fan base is going to receive it. And you having written for this fan base and worked around it for a while, I wonder what your take is. Is everybody ready to sign up for just like a Steph appreciation tour? Like that's what we're doing here. We're not worrying about wins and losses as much. We're just here to watch him perform.
The fascinating part to this, Mark, is I think the people within, the Steve Kerrs, the Draymonds, the day-to-day people in the organization, they've lived in the Steph appreciation tour for years. And that's a credit to self-awareness, because they knew what they were seeing is, oh my gosh, this guy is unbelievable. But to the broader point about the expectations and the shift in how everybody's kind of operating, I think you have to be. Because if we're all acknowledging at the very top of the notes on the legal pad, the Warriors are not good enough anymore. 1A is Steph isn't going anywhere. He's still incredible, and he's the most fun basketball player anybody has ever seen, probably since Michael. I mean, I know there are Kobe fans and LeBron fans. Steph changed the game. Steph is the best at what he does that we're ever going to see, and he's still really, really good. So I don't think the shift into, hey, every night we go somewhere, it's going to be the Steph appreciation tour, because I think, weirdly, in the moment, all of these people are like, wow, we are seeing something we have never seen before and we're never going to see again. The problem is they're going to have to accept that they're not going to win the same way.
Right.
And that is going to be tougher for all involved. But specific to Steph, if you signed up Steve Kerr for a few more years of, I'm going to make a ton of money, I'm going to get to coach this guy, and I'm going to ride off into the sunset for a team that may or may not go to the playoffs a couple more times, he'd sign up for that in a heartbeat.
Well, he's got one more year after this one, and you were mentioning some of the farewell tours, and Kobe's is maybe the most notable in that they were awful, and he was allowed to shoot every time, but Laker fans, Mark was down there broadcasting. It seemed like nobody really seemed to mind because you're L.A. and you knew you'd be back. I'm looking at Nowitzki, his last few years, 3 years in a row they didn't make the playoffs, and he was a 40-year-old shuffling up and down, hitting his little patented 12-footer. The other one's Tim Duncan, where they were still good because they had Kawhi Leonard. So his farewell tour, and he played till he was 40, he could be a bench guy, and you had Kawhi who'd kind of taken the reins. So unless Kuminga becomes their Kawhi, I think Steph is kind of resigned to the reality of Dirk and Kobe as opposed to Tim Duncan.
And he's going to have to be, if he meant what he said, Dibs, in that this is the only place I ever want to be. Because as even as we're kind of laying out the different options and here's the path to this or that, there's not a path, and please call us if you see one, where you acquire player A or player B for what you have the ability to give up, and this team goes from the 11th or 12th seed to like 3. That just doesn't exist. And there is that true serum, Dibs, you mentioned, like, okay, everybody has to accept whatever is coming.
Is there a deal, though, that gets him to 6 or 7? Because that's kind of where I am.
Can we get to 8?
And I think that...
Can we get in without having to go through the play-in?
You know what I mean? And I think that there's value in that, provided that you're not doing something stupid.
Mark, if you got Jimmy Butler here...
Yes.
And you didn't have to give him the 2 more years that
he wanted.
Absolutely. You want to talk about a puncher's chance. Steph still is Steph going in the playoffs. Draymond motivated as hell because the whole world is sitting here saying, no way, they're done, it's over. And Jimmy, who so desperately wants out of there now. If you told me the Warriors could acquire Jimmy Butler for the rest of this year and get to the 6th seed, I'd say, okay, there's some level of hope. It's not zero. Because I think Jimmy, for 3 or 4 months, would fit. He'd love the hell out of playing with Draymond and Steph. Let's see what happens. Do I think that the Warriors are good enough, even with Jimmy Butler, motivated as hell to show the world he can still play at the highest level? No. I don't think they could get all the way through. Win a first-round series? Sure. Depending on the matchup? Absolutely.
But see, that's the kind of vibe I got, though. The vibe I got, because Steve Kerr, in addition to the stuff that you heard him say yesterday, prior to that was talking about, we want to give Steph that at bat. And it's almost like I took that to mean, look, we're going to do everything we can to help him just get to a 7-game series. Even if it's on the road, even if it's against Denver or OKC, we're going to help him do that. And then once we do that, then Steph, now it's on you.
It's Game 7 in Sacramento again.
Right.
Yeah.
Go hit the ball.
Game 4
here comes
in Boston.
50 or 60, right. And we'll see what happens. That's the problem, though. Mark, can the Warriors win a first-round series? Absolutely. If they got the right piece, you know, that we're talking about. Can the Warriors win 4 series in a row in the playoffs and still be the team you have to be in order to have the consistency for 2.5 months in the postseason to get there? I don't believe so.
Yeah.
And what's even more is I don't see the pathway towards them getting back the pieces they would need to get close again. And I say that as somebody who believes that Steph Curry is still incredible and can turn it on the way Kerr was talking to you guys about.
I speak for everybody in this building, and I hope for so many people listening. Dude, it's so good to have you here.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's so good to have you here.
Appreciate it.
Thank you for coming by. Thank goodness you were listening to that damn interview yesterday.
Truly, it was great. I told Luke, I mean, you guys do great. I still listen all the time. It's really great to see you, and I really, really miss it out here because in all my travels, being around a city and a region that cares as deeply as people do out here about that team, that is something special. And that is not something that we see all the time, and I certainly didn't take it for granted. So it's great to be with you all, and thanks for having me.
And bingo night and dinner at 5 o'clock, it's underrated, Nick.
No, I've had enough. I'm ready for whatever's coming, much like the Warriors. For whatever's coming next, I'm ready for the next step.
It's like it's rated perfectly, actually. Yeah, man, great to have you. That is Odyssey. Thanks, NBA Insider Nick Friedell, and Insider Calls are brought to you by Hyundai. Now you can buy a new Hyundai at Amazon. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. All right, Warriors Live still a half hour away. We'd love to hear from you. 888-957-9570. You can react to anything you just heard in that conversation, and then also weigh in on this. You can buy this or sell this, but would you be ready as a Warrior fan to sign up for the Steph Appreciation Tour rather than grinding on the idea of a title every year? Wonder what Warrior fans think about that. We'll take your calls next. 888-957-9570. Willard and Dibbs.